Welcome to a brand new episode of Calm It, recording Wednesday, May 26th, just about 1 o'clock here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lovewitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. We're going to blow through the open as I just did. No emotional open, no pleasantries, Lovewitz, because we're both incredibly heated today about different things. We'll get into that in a little bit. But first, we need to talk about the playoffs because we haven't. The Bruins and the Celtics. We'll start with the Bruins. They had the gentleman sweep of the Washington Capitals last week, a gentleman sweep that I predicted, by the way, said Bruins in 5 on Twitter. But now, I guess before we get into what's next, right, we're still waiting on the opponent for round two. But just your overall thoughts on that Bruins series and how they played against the Caps.
They look great. I mean, it's awesome. I think the most important thing to note is Tuukka Rask played really well. He faced a lot of shots. Sometimes the defense wasn't, you know, all that productive, specifically in game one, which is the one game that they ironically lost. But they recovered. And I think what you saw from the Bruins is the fact that they never really lost their head. They played some sloppy hockey. There are a lot of kind of dumb penalties. I don't think the officiating was all that great in the first place. But either way, you know, they weren't playing that discipline all the time. Their penalty kill was good. They responded well. And overall, they were just simply put the better team. So great series for the Bruins. And I think we said coming in that this was probably going to be the toughest team that they had to face. They win the series in five games, you know, although, you know, it's going to be a tough road ahead. It's a great sign. And I think you got to be excited if you're a Bruins fan from what you've seen.
And I think it's not just that they won it in five games. They did things that they haven't done in the past couple years in the playoffs, at least not consistently, right? You saw production from the top line. It took David Pastrnak a little bit of time to get going there in that series, but he started producing. And of course, Bergeron and Marchand were both great. You saw trade deadline acquisitions playing well, right? Taylor Hall had a great series the last couple years at the deadline. The guys they've acquired, even, you know, you go back to Rick Nash, who I think scored like 9 goals in 12 games in the regular season after they acquired him at the deadline, kind of disappeared in the playoffs. And you saw last year, obviously, Kasha didn't play. So they have deadline acquisition stepping up. And then Tuukka Rask was just awesome. He had a fantastic series, stood on his head. So it feels a little different to me, Lovewitz, right? We've seen the Bruins look like a wagon in the first round before, and then the wheels fall off. This one felt a little different. And call me out if I'm wrong on it, but this one felt a little different to me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think you hit on something big. Middle of the season, I think people were skeptical as to what the ceiling of this team was. If they really were a Stanley Cup team, a lot of people thought they were, and they obviously had the talent pre-trade deadline to get to you know, that point potentially. But bring in Mike Riley, who played a huge role specifically in that last game, and then Taylor Hall, who, you know, you could just see it on the ice. He's completed that second line, and they're looking really good. Craig Smith having that game winner in what was a game three, and David Krejci looking pretty good as well. Those two acquisitions, you could argue, was a difference between them winning in five games and this being a legitimate series that could have been a toss-up. So that's huge. They're just playing well together. Clicking. That first line is clicking. And when you have David Pastrnak, who starts out slow, you know, start to kind of find his form late in the series. And despite starting out slow, the rest of the team was able to make up for that slow start and continue to win. That's a great sign. And not to, you know, be a broken record, but having Tuukka Rask play as well as he did is huge. That gives you a massive cushion. And it's not like they're playing that well defensively to really make it easy for Rask at moments. And you could look at a lot of different games of series, and that was obviously the case. But he showed up. Those new acquisitions showed up, and your star players are starting to show up. So, it's a phenomenal sign. I don't think the optimism is unwarranted whatsoever.
Yeah, and with Rask, too, it's not just that he looked good. Obviously, that's a big part of it. But he looked healthy, right? And that, he was dealing with the back injury, kept him out for most of the second half of the season. Even when he came back, he was looking a little labored. There were few, if any, moments where it didn't seem like he was moving well. So encouraging on that front. All right. So this might be decided by the time people listen to this episode. Penguins and Islanders tonight at 6:30. The Islanders lead that series 3-2. Lebowitz, who would you rather see the Bruins play?
I mean, I like, I think the Islanders are probably the worst team, right? You saw that game five. They had no business winning that game. They still did. And sometimes when you have a team that's playing like not great, but still finds a way to win, that could be troubling. But overall, I think this was a good rivalry during the course of the season. I think as the season went on, from the Bruins standpoint, they started to play them a little bit tougher, more aggressively, and even got the better of them a few times there. The Penguins would be awesome. I think that would be great. And obviously, there's a history there between the Penguins and the Bruins to some extent. But overall, I think, you know, the Islanders would be a good matchup. And I don't have the records in front of me in regard to head-to-head between the Bruins and the Penguins, but I don't think it was great this year for the Bees. And you know, at the start of the year, I think the same could be said for how they played against the Islanders. But I think they've turned a corner, and I think they're much better than they were towards the middle of the season. So, long answer, short. Or short answer, long. I want to see the Islanders in round two.
See, I want to see the Penguins. I do. The Islanders gave the Bruins trouble throughout the regular season, and I look at the kind of teams that this Bruins core has struggled with in the playoffs, right? They're generally not superstar-driven teams, right? I think back to that Blues team in 2019. That was just a team that was incredibly deep. That the entire roster, there was every player on the ice could hurt you in one way or another, and those are the teams the Bruins struggle with. And the Islanders remind me more of that, whereas the Penguins are that team where it's the superstar at the top and then everything funnels from there. Historically, the Bruins have fared very well against those teams. Look at what just happened, right? Against the Capitals and against Alexander
Ovechkin. Yeah, that's true.
Ovechkin had one big goal, but for more or less, he was a non-factor in that series. The Lightning are kind of their own thing. Because people say, well, they lost the Lightning and they have superstars. They're kind of both. They're just a really, really good hockey team, right? But give me the superstar. I'll say it. Give me the superstar. Bring in the superstar, because the Bruins seem to know how to contend. And it's not that the Penguins don't have other good players, right? Got Malkin and yada, yada, yada. But the Bruins have owned Crosby. Remember that series in 20, I think it was 2013, the Tory Krug year, right? Where they blew out the Rangers, and then they're playing the Penguins, and that was a loaded Penguins team. That Penguins team was a popular pick to win the Cup, and the Bruins swept them, and Crosby didn't have a point in four games. They own Crosby, relatively. So I want the Penguins. The other thing about the Penguins at this point, and I had this take before we got to this point, but now that we're at this point, if the Penguins win, it means the series goes seven games. And whoever the Bruins play, they want that series to go seven games. Right. Even if you want the Islanders, I think you're pulling for the Penguins tonight, just so, you know, whichever team it is a little more beat up coming into the series. So I'll go that way.
That also goes back to your point about Tuukka looking healthy. I you know, one of the biggest advantages to winning a game, you know, as quickly as in five games, especially when you have a bunch of series throughout the NHL going six, seven games, having to go the distance. It gives you rest, and I think that's important for this Bruins team, specifically at that goaltending position. And also, when you did deal with a few injuries, whether it's Kevin Miller, Lauzon, and a bunch of other guys who were dinged up, and it'll be nice to have, you know, fresh bodies for round two.
All right, Celtics. Or do you have any more Bruins thoughts, or do you want to?
I did go to the game. I did go to game three. With 25% capacity, and it was awesome.
How was that?
That was the game two overtime winner. Craig Smith capitalizing on that mistake from Samsonov. It was awesome. It was great. It was a really good time. 6:30 puck drop. Didn't matter though, because it went to two OTs. But it was a good atmosphere. It would have been awesome if it was a full crowd. Obviously, you want that. It still felt like a playoff atmosphere though. And I'll say it. I know this might be taboo. There are a lot of perks to going to games during the COVID times. I mean, it really makes going to sporting events a lot more convenient, specifically in Boston. I think other markets, you don't have to deal with that because it's never sold out. In Boston, it's just easier getting in and out, and it just less of a hassle, I guess.
But is the experience the same?
I think that this one was still a great experience. Like, it's a game I'll always remember just because it was the playoffs. And there was also a guy, I was in the balcony. I was on row 11. The guy in front of us, row 10, fell all the way from that 10th row over the seats in front of him all the way to the first row. He was fine. It was awesome because he was fine. But it was hilarious. Anyway, he came back second overtime after missing like 20 minutes, bandaged up, and then they scored the goal. They scored that goal to win it.
Love to hear
that
it.
That would not have happened if it was a full capacity.
You're
it
right.
It would have been someone in front of him to break that fall. So there are benefits.
Yeah, I just want to see I want to see it loud. I want to see it fill out. It sounds like when the second series starts. I don't think they're going to be at full capacity. I know that the Celtics are doing 17,000-something, so they'll be about 1,000 under. I'm guessing the Bruins. They've said that they will be near full capacity. So I'm guessing it's a, you know, relative to hockey, it's a lower attendance for hockey, but a relatively similar number around within 1,000 of the full attendance. So I'm certainly looking for that. All right, let's get to the Celtics. I knew it was going to be bad. I think we all knew it was going to be bad. I don't think anybody had super high expectations for this team. What's that meme? It's like, our expectations were you for low. Our expectations for you were low, but wow, or something like that.
But holy shit. Or something
okay,
like
yeah,
that.
Whatever. No, it's all good. I honestly couldn't remember if there was a...
Yeah, it's something like that.
The first game, they make it close in the first game, right? And that was fun, but last night, it's not the lack of talent at this point. It's outside of that one, you know, fiery moment from Evan Fournier, and good for him, you know. He has as little skin in the game as anybody. He's only been here for 2 months. Outside of that moment, did that look like a team that, you know, they look like we all felt. This is over. Why should I care? You know,
yeah.
And if I'm with Grossbeck, I'm calling Brad and Danny and saying, what just happened? Because, and I, you know, I Celtics fans make the excuse, oh, they don't have Jaylen Brown. Yeah, Jaylen Brown's probably not the difference in them winning or losing the series, but here's the reality. If you have a team that is just going to quit when one of the best players is hurt, you don't have a very good team, because that's sports. Players get hurt. You need to be prepared for that. And if you have a GM whose roster is a house of cards hinging on one or two players, that's not good. Yes, you know, you're not going to be as good when you lose one of your best players. You obviously can't have infinite depth. But the Celtics were not prepared for this loss, and they seem completely demoralized by losing Jaylen Brown. That's worrisome beyond the fact that, oh, they're getting blown out by the Nets. That, to me, speaks to deeper issues.
Well, I don't think I think this is a long-lasting issue. I think this is a problem that, you know, goes way beyond specifically the series. And, you know, that quit that you're referencing, that's something that I've seen while watching them play over the past few months. And again, this is why I think that moving on from Brad Stevens specifically is a no-brainer, even though it appears he has, you know, ample job security for some reason. And I understand he has a horrible roster. I get that. But it's pathetic. I can't watch this team. I watched the first quarter. They're down 40-24. You know, a Swiss cheese defense, can't hit shots. Just no chemistry whatsoever between these guys. It's as if they don't like to play with each other. And no fight. There's zero toughness with this team. And I just can't root for them. Like, I'm actively disinterested in this team. It's frustrating. And I knew coming in that this was probably going to be the way it went. A four-game series, getting swept, getting demolished, looking silly, being embarrassing to watch. And they haven't disappointed in that regard. So I think the question here is, you know, who's to blame? How do you change this issue? How deep is this issue? And you know, how deep will the fix have to be? So, and I know, like, every time we talk about the Celtics, it sucks, because it always, this is my fault, always goes into, like, what do they need to do? Like, where do they go from here? You know, we should be talking about this series specifically, but it's just a microcosm for how disappointing they've been and all of their issues in general. I've been on the record. My rooting interest, more so than rooting for the Celtics, is rooting against the Nets. Obviously, the series has me very upset, but it's not surprising. And moving forward, I hope they lose, the Nets, that is. But either way, that really speaks to my disinterest and just disconnection with this team based off of how disappointing they've been. It's horrendous. I can't remember being this disappointed in a team that I've rooted for probably since, you know, the 2011, 2012 Red Sox. But this it's horrible.
Well, I just want to backtrack to something you said, right, about how this was expected. I didn't expect this effort. And maybe that's on me. Maybe that's on me for being too optimistic. But I think I said this last time we did the show, Lebowitz. I know I said it somewhere, that it was after the, or maybe it was two shows ago, when the Celtics got swept by the Heat at the end of the regular season there, and they were locked into the play-in tournament. I said something along the lines of, it's all an audition from here on out. It's who's going to show the powers that be, when it comes to the Celtics, that they still want to be a part of this organization, that they're willing to fight, that they're willing to show that they care and they want to be a part of this organization going forward. And I was hoping you would see guys step up, and yeah, maybe they're not playing for a playoff spot, and yeah, they're going to get beat by the Nets, but who's playing for pride? Because that's what this team lacks right now, any sense of pride. And I thought we were going to see it. I did. I thought we were going to see guys maybe step up and say, we're not going out like this. I'm not going away like this. I'm going to put up my best fight. Maybe we'll lose, but I'm not going down without trying. And outside of Marcus Smart and that one moment from Evan Fournier, I don't know that I've seen it. Kendrick Perkins said it on Toucher and Rich the other day. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum don't have any fight in them. Marcus Smart is the only one willing to get physical. Nobody throws punches in the NBA anymore. You can talk trash. You can chest bump. You can whatever. They don't do it. There's another stat I saw. Since 2017, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have combined to draw exactly one charge. There's no fight in this team, again, outside of Smart and outside of Evan Fournier. It just doesn't exist. And again, maybe that's on me for thinking I'd see it. I didn't realize that it's sad about the charge and going all the way back in that. I didn't realize that, but I thought I'd see some fight. I thought I'd see some passion. I thought I'd see some pride from this team, and it just hasn't been there.
No, it hasn't. And you know, part of it obviously falls on Danny Ainge, not even for not building a talented roster, for not bringing in, you know, guys who would add to the energy. Because I think you're hitting on something that's really important when it comes to this team. It's not the talent. It's the energy. It's the competitive nature. It's the toughness. And they don't have it, with the exception of like one or two guys on this team. And I think part of the issue is also that they feel dejected because, you know, everything has gone wrong for the Celtics. And there's been a lot of poor management and multiple factors, at least over the past 18 months or so. And it's easy to get dejected in that circumstance. It's also easy to become complacent when you have a coach that's been there too long, who's not resonating with players, who can't bring up the energy. That's not people like to defend Brad Stevens a lot, but it's not arguable that he has not been able to get energy out of these guys like he should as the head coach on an NBA roster. Their defense has been super lacking, has been inconsistent. Their offense, same thing. Jason Tatum stinks every third game. We saw it last night. He was locked down, and then he'll go around and he'll blame it on COVID, which personally I think is a bunch of BS. And I just find this whole season to be infuriating. And at this point, there are guys who are definitely playing for their jobs. And the reality is there's a lot of guys who no matter what are going to keep their jobs, whether it's because they're young and Danny Ainge is attached to the prospects or whether they're on a long term deal. But something drastic needs to happen. Something drastic needs to change. And until then, I'm just counting down the minutes until this series ends, until this season ends for the Celtics, and until we can hit the reset button to some extent and try to get some life into this organization. Organization, they need drastic change. Drastic, drastic change.
And then after the game, so we'll move on to the next part here. Kyrie Irving asked about his return to Boston, says he hopes fans will keep it just basketball and not be belligerent or use subtle racism. We'll start here. There's been racist issues with fans in Boston. I'm not denying that. Lebowitz, I don't believe you would deny that. Any reasonable person wouldn't deny that. Adam Jones in 2017 at Fenway Park. There was a DeMarcus Cousins issue. I think it was 2019. I apologize if I got the year wrong. It's been an issue. For what it's worth, Kyrie Irving said in 2019 after the DeMarcus Cousins incident that he had never experienced it as a fan or as a member of the team or as an opponent. That was right before he left. He's played just two games in Boston since, both were without fans. It felt very forced for him to bring it up. It felt like he was looking to set the narrative of what the boos would be and disregard his entire tenure in Boston and the things that took place.
Yeah, he's the victim. He's the victim. In every situation, he's the victim. And the reason I say that is because I don't really buy this, because he's saying it at a pretty bizarre time. And that bizarre timing is him right before going back to play in front of Boston Celtic fans for the first time since leaving the Celtics. I mean, why wouldn't he have brought this up earlier if this was a real issue? Especially when he's had the opportunity to, considering he's played against the Celtics multiple times. And he's also somebody you usually speak his mind, a lot of times to his own detriment. But I think this is a guy, in my opinion, who has a crappy perspective on just about everything. And, you know, I look at how he's handled his exit from Boston, how he's handled the reaction to him leaving, giving half-hearted explanations or apologies kind of for how he, you know, for why he tuned out, you know, the rest of his teams and the teammates and really the coaching staff towards the end of his tenure. And it's just somebody who's never fully taken accountability. And when he has, it's been completely disingenuous. And the reason we know it's disingenuous is because he says stuff like this right before coming back. He's labeling an entire fan base as subtly racist. And what I'd like is some examples of what that racism is, instead of just throwing a blanket statement out there to score favor, so that when you do inevitably get booed, which you deserve, you'll have that to fall back on. You'll be able to act like you're the victim, that you did nothing wrong, and that these fans have no legitimate reason to be upset with you. I think it's trivializing a legitimate issue, which is racism amongst fan bases in sports, and in general, obviously. And I think that this is a guy who usually talks from his ass, thinks he's the smartest guy in the room when he's never even close. And I'm just not going to give him the benefit of the doubt here, because I don't think he's earned that right. And some people might think I'm being extreme, but I see right through this guy's bullshit, and, you know, I'm just sick of it. And I also think the Boston is racist narrative is completely overplayed. Personally, as someone who's gone to, you know, hundreds of sporting events in Boston, you know, I understand I'm a white guy. I think I'd be able to tell if there was, you know, racism or something like that. That was a rampant problem in Boston sporting events. I don't think it really is. I think that you have certain people who are racist. I think you have certain people who are just horrible and treat others with complete disrespect. But I don't think it's a widespread problem. I think most Boston sports fans are good people who, you know, enjoy sports for the right reasons and criticize for the right reasons. But either way, I found the comments to be kind of cowardly. I'd like him to go into detail if he really has a valid criticism to give.
I mean, I have been to a game where I experienced something. Not me personally experienced something. Like, I was sitting in a section. It was at Patriots-Dolphins game. It was whatever year it was. It was around, would have been whenever Trump made the comment about to get that bastard off the field, whatever, and the players start. Not the first wave of kneeling, like the second wave of kneeling, right? Mm-hmm. But they were playing the Dolphins, and Kenny Stills kneeled, and he caught a deep pass or something. Somebody yelled something at him, and, you know, it was uncomfortable. It was unfortunate. I wish I'd said something at the time. I didn't. It happens. I've seen it.
I'm sure it does.
I don't know that, you know, if I think it is a conversation worth having. It absolutely is, and it's a conversation where we as Boston sports fans want to root those people out and not make people comfortable where they feel like they can do that in a very crowded place. What Kyrie's doing isn't trying to have that conversation. He's just protecting himself. Yeah. So that's where he's using an important conversation for his own benefit. And I think although I did like some Tony Mass floated the idea that what if the fans are just silent when he touched the ball?
Have you ever seen the movie Mystery Alaska?
I have not.
You've not. Oh, great movie. I highly recommend it. You know, I was thinking about it. It's one of the most overlooked sports movies of all time. It's with Kurt Russell, Diane Lane, Hank Azaria, Mike Myers is even in it. A very good cast. And it's about a team in Alaska, Mystery Alaska, with, you know, the Inuits and a bunch of people who live there, move there and whatnot. And they're born and raised in Alaska. And they have a really good hockey team, outdoor hockey team. And the NHL wants to do a game against the Rangers up in Alaska. It's like a scrimmage game before the season, kind of like a longest yard type of thing, to warm them up, although with a professional team. And the New York Rangers show up, they're there, and they're being introduced, and it's the New York Rangers, like one of the most marketable hockey teams in the NHL. A bunch of these people in Mystery Alaska are at the game, and, you know, New York Rangers are expecting fanfare and, you know, mayhem, because they don't get to see NHL hockey all the time. Lo and behold, they get introduced, and every person in the stands takes out a newspaper and opens it up and just starts reading it in dead silence while the New York Rangers are taking the ice. And they're completely perplexed. And, you know, my high school, my public high school, the fan section did this when we play Central Catholic, our rival. And it's something that other fan bases have adopted. That's where it stems from. Anyway, the Celtics should do that. They should, at the gate, hand out a bunch of newspapers and just every fan open it up when the Nets are introduced, complete silence, and that'll be your up yours to Kyrie Irving in a civil, passive type of way. That's what I think they should do.
Can I one-up that idea real quick? Because I really like it, but can I one-up it?
Please do.
Instead of newspapers, pamphlets about, you know, facts on the world being round. So you think the world is flat. Here's some information to know.
Or just like it's like you have the twofold newspaper, and on one side it's this just in, the world is round, and on the other side, this just in, the dinosaurs actually did exist, you idiot.
That one slides, by the way. I didn't even know about that until a couple days ago. He gets much of a pass for that one.
Well, he's a moron. He's an idiot.
No, I know, but why are we not? First off, if there's one athlete that's going to deny dinosaurs, it's Carl Everett, because he did it in the best way possible. Right. He called Dan Shaughnessy like Barney the Dinosaur or something like that. They started calling him Jurassic Carl. Carl Everett's the only athlete that gets to deny dinosaurs, because Carl Everett can do whatever Carl Everett wants, because Carl Everett's freaking hilarious. Second of all, I think saying dinosaurs don't exist is actually more egregious than saying the world is flat. They're both pretty bad. Am I wrong on that? I think I'm just kind of forming this take on the spot, but.
Well, I think his rationale for why dinosaurs don't exist was because his rationale was like, yeah, they find like one bone, but they can. But how you go to a museum and they have a whole dinosaur constructed there? It's like you're an idiot. Like they can scale it out, and they have a scientific procedure to signify where that bone was in the body and what shape. Like they found enough materials over the years to know dinosaurs existed, you idiot. People who are a lot smarter than you, who have, you know, much more education, a much higher educational background than you do. It's just so stupid. And he's trying to play it off like he was joking. He wasn't joking. He's an idiot.
That's what he does with all of it. But yeah, I don't know. The dinosaur thing to me, people think the earth is flat. I think it's more of a meme at this point than anything. Like, remember when like B.O.B. was super into it, the rapper, right? The dinosaurs one, because it also the dinosaur one normally means that you're like anti-evolution, which is a completely different discussion. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, there's a great video of this guy who's a flat earther, and he's in this documentary, and the documentary essentially serves a purpose of it's there's no bias, there's no angle, it's objective, but it essentially indicates that these people are all full of shit. And the guy is like, okay, so if I place this light here and do the Earth's curvature and put this paper back here, even though it's flat ground, it won't show because the Earth's curvature won't allow it. But I think it will because the Earth is flat. And what do you know? His hypothesis is wrong, and it indicates that the Earth is round. And he goes, well, it's very interesting. And obviously the guy doesn't change his mind. He just finds a new way to justify him having a stupid thought. And I think that's Kyrie Irving's existence in a nutshell. He's trying to find stupid ways to absolve himself of any blame on anything, and to make sure that there is a some type of qualifier to make sure whatever he's saying isn't in fact the dumbest shit in the world. So I don't know. The guy's just so full of shit, and I hate him. I really do. Least favorite athlete of all time. You know, that he might win another championship, but he's still stuck with that 10-cent brain. So
yeah, mine's still Eli Manning, Eli Manning, Julio Lugo 1 and 2.
Really? So. Over Kyrie? Well, Eli Manning at least is a likable person.
Kyrie annoys me too much to have that much hate for him. It's more just like, I feel like if I hate him, I'm playing right into his hands, and I don't want to give him the satisfaction, if that makes sense.
Well, if you hate him, he's gonna claim that, you know, some crazy thing, and
I'm this way with people in general. I'm not a huge fan of people who just peacock, right? Who just, you know, give me all the attention. So I don't have the energy to hate Kyrie. It takes too much. Look at, you just went on that whole rant. That must have drained you.
Oh no, I hate him. Listen, it's uncontrollable. I wish I could not think about him, and I hate the guy. But I do. He's constantly, they're always reporting on the dumb shit he says. And I think the most frustrating part, and the reason why I get so worked up about it, is because, you know, for some reason, he's well respected within the NBA by a lot of guys. And I just find that outrageous. And I think it all comes down to the fact that he's just a great basketball player.
Right. And this is probably the other reason why Kyrie's not on my list. The number one thing I can't stand in terms of athletes, I can't stand overrated athletes. I can't stand guys who get credit for things they didn't do. Like Tim Tebow, that's why I'm not a Tim Tebow guy, right? Because Tim Tebow's not good and he gets a ton of credit. He's not good. Say what you will about Kyrie Irving. He's a hell of a basketball player.
Of course he is.
When he plays. So that, like, at least he's not overrated. If Kyrie said all the stuff he said and he was overrated, he'd be at the top of my list. But I can't, you know, I just don't, like, I look at a guy like Ben Simmons, who's considered like a top 10 player, even though he's a point guard who can only play in the paint, right? Yeah. Like, that's the guy that irks me more, because I'm, at the end of the day, I'm watching basketball for basketball. I don't really care what Kyrie Irving says. He does entertain me.
At least Ben Simmons isn't justifiably hated by a fan base and blames it on racism.
No, it's even worse. Sixers fans shouldn't like Ben Simmons. He's a huge reason that team hasn't reached their potential, yet they love him. That pisses me off.
But he's not alleging something. He's not making a slanderous allegation about a whole
region. I think he's claiming to be an elite basketball player, which is slanderous to me. But that's all right. We're not going to go down that road, because I want to talk about the real issue. Because like I just said, I just want to talk about the games that are being played. I understand, you know, we've had in the last year the whole, you have to talk about real life and sports, but you cross a line. And I woke up this morning, and we were talking about Spygate. Not Deflategate. Spygate. 15 years ago. I don't even know which part of this rant I want to do first. Okay.
Well, let's do the backstory. Seth Wickersham's at it again.
The real backstory is the Patriots did nearly nothing wrong. They didn't. It's not, people think, oh, they recorded the Jets illegally. It was perfectly legal to record the sideline. It was where you placed the camera that the NFL restricted, which is stupid. But that's the rule they broke. They could have recorded it from another, it could have recorded from a different spot. It would have been fine. The NFL has also never explicitly stated what rule the Patriots broke. The NFL has said it had to do with the position of the camera that was related to a memo that was sent out to teams that year. That memo has never been released. So we don't know. On top of that, six other teams were found doing the same thing the Patriots were, including, by the way, the New York Jets and Eric Mangini, who narked on the Patriots. You know why? Because he was going to get caught. And I'll say a lot of bad things about Eric Mangini, but he was smart in this one instance, because he knows this. It doesn't matter if you get caught cheating. Just don't be the first one to get caught, because that's the person who gets in trouble. Or that's the group that gets in trouble. After that, it's all old news. Just don't be the first one to get caught. And he made sure the Patriots were the first ones to get caught. And on top of that, of those other teams that got caught doing the exact same thing, do you know how many of them made the playoffs? None. So clearly there wasn't this huge difference, this huge competitive difference that was gained by what the Patriots were doing. And people want to call it a cover-up in this and that. Just like Deflategate, you know why people cry cover-up? because they want to blame you for the original thing, but there's not enough there to actually do it. Why did Tom Brady destroy his phone? It's not because there was evidence. It's because the NFL had repeatedly had sensitive information leaked, right? The Ray Rice elevator video. And maybe Brady had dirty text from Giselle. Maybe a dirty text from somebody else. Maybe it was just his bank number, something in his phone that he didn't want to risk the NFL losing, getting hacked. So he destroyed his phone. But 15 years later, we are still going to act like the Patriots upended the NFL with the most vicious, diabolical scheme since Watergate. And we're going to tie in something else that we should have stopped talking about a long time ago. Donald Trump. And here's where Seth Wickersham comes in. And this is what he does. He ties empirical evidence together and tries to make a story out of it. And what he's saying is that apparently this senator from Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, wanted Congress to investigate the Patriots for Spygate and investigate the NFL to see if the NFL covered anything up. And supposedly somebody went to Specter and said, there's some money coming your way if you, you know, clamp down on this. And now, based off Specter's son, who, by the way, I have some accounts is not the most trustworthy person. Now Specter's son is saying that person was Donald Trump. And Specter had his baggage too, by the way. And so Donald Trump, on behalf of Robert Kraft, went to Arlen Specter and said, don't investigate the Patriots and I'll make you a campaign contribution. Now, a couple of things. First off, people are going to say, oh, Donald Trump is involved, so this is bad. I'm by no means a fan of Donald Trump. But if he stopped the government from spending millions of taxpayers of dollars and man hours investigating a professional sports team for cheating on the field, allegedly, good. The government shouldn't be doing that. You know what else was going on at this time, Lebowitz? Two wars, right? Always Sunny. Two wars.
A recession.
And the recession was right about to hit. We had also just finished the baseball congressional hearings in the Mitchell report, which baseball is still recovering from 15 years later. Did football need a Mitchell report? Because that's essentially what Specter was trying to do. On top of that, Specter was an Eagles fan, and Wickersham puts out there, was miffed about the Super Bowl in 2004 when the Patriots beat the Eagles. That was his main goal, was to prove the Patriots cheated in that game. On top of that, he had connections to Comcast, you know, Comcast, which is now NBC Universal, which was feuding with the NFL at the time over whether or not they would carry NFL Network, which had just been launched. So where Seth Wickersham tries to paint you this picture of this valiant lone wolf senator going up against United States Congress and up against the NFL and the powers that be, on a crusade for the truth and justice, what you really have is a butthurt Eagles fan just lobbying, like most senators do. But now we're going to have to go through this all again. And Brady's a cheater, and Belichick's a cheater, and they're tied to Trump, and the titles don't count. It sucks so much that we witness unheralded dominance, and we can't enjoy it. Because these people can't just let sleeping dogs lie. All right, I'm done.
That's a good one. This was quintessential clickbait. What essentially boils down to is what some dead guy's son said, alleged, or may not have alleged, by the way. We don't know if this guy actually said that, which is the exact, flaw in reporting on something that a dead guy is alleged to have said. 10 years ago, he died 10 years ago, his son saying, or about 10 years ago, his son saying he said Donald Trump tried to bribe him, which I don't even know if this guy, from what I read, had full proof of that, that claim. Even he didn't know if it was definitely, Trump. Either way, this is all hearsay. This is all speculation being spun as some big revelation. There's nothing new here. It just comes down to, rehashing the motivations of a disgruntled Eagle fan who happened to be a United States senator. And it's just sad that this is being played out. And, obviously, The only reason this is a story, the only reason this is being made, into a Wickersham hit piece type thing, is because Donald Trump is involved. And again, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump either. But there's no doubt that there are a lot of people in the media who will play up certain things if that guy is involved. He is a firestorm. He gets you clicks. I guarantee you that this is probably the most, read story that Wickersham has published in 2021. And it's because it includes all the staples, rehashing the Patriots' quote-unquote cheating ways and discussing Robert Kraft's ties with Donald Trump. And then you have this aspect of this senator meeting with Robert Kraft years later, presumably to probably get some money for his campaign. And the son's acting like the guy was too proud to take the campaign bribery back in 2008, when this alleged quote unquote bribe was offered. It is a joke. It is an absolute joke. It's also not a bribe,
by the way.
It's not technically a bribe. It's legal bribery is what it is in politics.
It's in the piece. And Wickersham kind of doubled back on himself, where he basically interviewed a bunch of people who said, yeah, your whole thesis is incorrect. But he talks to some congressional spending expert who says, yeah, things like this happen all the time. And are they, they're not right, but they're not wrong. So
either way, there's no proof of it besides one guy's claim. This is I saw Richard Deitch say, or Deitch, whatever the hell however his name is pronounced, say this was extensive, solid reporting. I was like, publishing a story in which the premise is based off of an allegation from one person that in no way, shape, or form can be verified, and and was also denied by two of the alleged parties. That's not solid reporting. That's the opposite. That's brutal reporting. That's going forward with a clickbait hit piece. It's brutal. It's just absolutely egregious journalism.
It reminds me of Lebowitz, South Park episode Dances with Smurfs?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. When Cartman writes the book and he accuses Wendy Testaberger of, Testaberger does this, Wendy Testaberger does that.
She does the morning announcements.
And then, right. But then, so remember, Stan goes, this book is all just you accusing Wendy of stuff she didn't do. And Cartman goes, no, turn the page. Or does she? And he goes, yes, or does she? See, I'm not accusing her of anything. Yeah, I'm just asking the questions. That's kind of what Seth Wickersham's doing. Right.
Well, that was the end of the article. It was like, we will never know if this is true.
Right. Seth Wickersham, I could say from empirical evidence, Seth Wickersham has made up everything he's ever said. Or does he? I don't know. You can't prove a negative.
Who knows?
You can't prove a negative. So I can't believe. And Wickersham has a book coming out, apparently. So this is, I'm guessing, just the tip of the iceberg. But I cannot believe we are doing Spygate again. Again, I just went through it. Did the Patriots technically violate the letter of the law? Apparently they did. We've never seen specifically what they violated. We've been told that this is what they did, but we've never seen it. I would like to see that memo. I can only imagine, because the NFL, you want to talk about a cover-up? Why is the NFL not putting that memo out there? Why has we never seen it?
And to be fair, that was one of the senator's targets too. He wanted to remove the antitrust element to the NFL,
because he wanted to remove the antitrust. He's working for Comcast.
Go
ahead. You go first, because I'm going to go again.
Well, the whole target was the NFL. I think he felt like, obviously he may have been doing the bidding for Comcast. It's absolutely possible. He could have been a disgruntled Eagles fan, and he could have just not liked Roger Goodell. He was a lone wolf in this. There was no one else willing to take this journey with him, to fight this fight.
Because it was stupid.
Yes.
Because exactly. It was stupid. And this is why. Because, and I really haven't seen a lot of people bring this up, and I find it interesting, but this is where my mind went right to. We had just been through the congressional steroid hearings for Major League Baseball. We had just been through the Mitchell report. It was the first major, we've talked a lot in the last year about the link between sports and politics, but that really has not applied to the actual product on the field. We've talked about the playing of the anthem. We've talked about flyovers. We've talked about athletes making political statements, teams making political statements. That's not what I'm talking about here. I am talking about the government getting involved when it comes to wins and losses on the field. We had just kind of come through a period of that where the government investigated Major League Baseball for their handling of the steroid era. It was a horrible look for the government. It wasted a lot of taxpayer money and Congress's time, again, two wars and the recession. And it nearly killed baseball. Why would anybody want to go through that same process again? Every single person involved with the Mitchell Report and those hearings, both the players and the government officials in the league, came out of that looking worse. Not a single person came out of that benefiting from it. Why would anybody want to do it again? Unless they were just a fan who was butthurt and using government funds they had at their disposal to chase that. This is like if the person on Twitter who bitches and moans about the refs after their team losing had the nuclear coach. It's an exaggeration, but this is yeah. where we are. It's the guy on Twitter who says, well, the refs did this and the refs did that, if he had the funding of the U.S. government behind him to prove that point. That's all this is. And yeah. we're acting like the fact that that guy didn't get what he wanted is a bad thing because the other side is Donald Trump and the other side is the Patriots. I know people don't like Donald Trump. I don't either. I know people don't like the Patriots. I do, but I get kind of why they don't. But holy crap, look at the big picture for a second. If you hate the Patriots that much that you'd be willing to spend your tax dollars on some wild goose chase, you need to reevaluate your priorities. And they'll come back at me and say, you just spent half an hour yelling about this. Are you sure you don't like the Patriots too much? It's my job. And you know what? I pay taxes too. Maybe you'd be fine if your tax money went to that. I don't want mine going to, I don't want my, like, if they said today that Congress was going to investigate the Houston Astros, I'd be
which
living,
was a way worse scandal, by the way.
Right, which in which something actually happened, I would be livid. Absolutely no way Congress should investigate the Houston Astros. They are a baseball team. They play a game. They have no bearing on the day-to-day well-being of the citizens of this country. But I'm supposed to get mad that the government won't get involved in that? Please. You know, it was one thing with the Cardinals and when they had the corporate espionage thing. And I don't know if the government got involved in that. If it's something like that, maybe. Maybe. Actual on-field wins and losses? Get the hell out of here.
It really was a complete waste of resources. And I don't think it's any coincidence that this guy lost when he ran for re-election. He lost in the primary, by the way. When he ran for re-election, he switched parties, the whole nine. It's just crazy. And again, like obviously one of the biggest points to this is the fact that where it was a horrible waste of time for a U.S. Senator to focus on. There clearly seemed to have been a personal vendetta here or some vested interest on his part. But again, to bring it back to Wickersham and ESPN and this whole article, This is a crazy allegation. You're alleging, you know, I know it's not technically bribery, but you're essentially alleging that there was a bribery attempt in which Robert Kraft willfully wanted the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, at the time, not the president, obviously.
Yeah, this was before. So this was 2008. I don't know if we ever specifically laid out the timeline, but I think late 2007, 2008, something like
that. But still, two people with extreme political influence, and Robert Kraft and Donald Trump at the time and obviously currently, alleging that they tried to bribe a U.S. senator to not investigate something. When you're doing this, you're making this allegation based off of one source that turns out to be that senator's son. You know, the senator has a personal vendetta against the Patriots and the NFL for really no legitimate reason whatsoever, besides probably his loose affiliation with Comcast and his vested interest in making sure that that local company, gets their due. It's just horrible. And you have people celebrating it. You have people in the media being like, this is great reporting. No, it's not. It's, again, it is clickbait. And it's all based off of a illegitimate, unreliable source. Someone who is as biased as it comes as closely, you know, affiliated with somebody who clearly is not objective and someone who's not even alive to back up these claims or to make these claims themselves.
Let me add one more thing. I don't know if we mentioned this. There's no evidence that money changed hands, and this is not why, right? Even if it did, it's not why the government didn't pursue the Patriots. They didn't do it because everybody knew it was a stupid idea.
And yeah, exactly. And they probably know that, you know, Roger Goodell, and they're not running a thorough, legitimate investigation on this type of stuff. And, you know, there's so many layers to this story, and you've already laid them out. But it's this is one in which the NFL is supposedly trying to, you know, sweep this under the rugs for you know, the Patriots' sake, but more so for their own reputational sake.
And you know
that's
what?
That's not it.
Maybe
at all.
They did. Fine. What should baseball have done with the steroids? Swept it under the rug.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they did.
I've given my cheating spiel on this show a number of times before. I don't really care. As long as you sack up and take your punishment, if you get caught, I don't really care. I think it's part of sports. It's not part of life. This doesn't apply to all of life. It just applies to sports. People break the rules all the time. That's what a freaking intentional foul is. And you let the other team shoot a free throw. You take your punishment, you move on. It's all, you know, it's all cause and effect analysis. Are you willing to take the risk of the punishment? That's all it is. I don't care. But these people who just sanctimoniously, this and this. I don't know. Are you familiar with the site Your Team Cheats, Lebowitz? And we'll leave it here because I know we're running long. Are you familiar with Your Team Cheats?
Sure, yeah, which in the case of the Patriots aren't even the worst cheaters in the NFL.
No, they're about reputation. The middle. They're about in the middle. Yeah. They're 14th biggest cheaters. So basically what the site does is they lay out all of the things that teams have been punished for, whether it, you know, be fines or loss of draft picks or whatever, yada, yada, yada. And they lay out who the biggest cheaters are in the NFL. So the Patriots are 14th. You know who the two least cheating teams in the NFL are? And then it's not really close between 2 and 3.
Bengals.
Girl, give you this. I'll give you 3 of the bottom 4. So the Bengals are 29th.
Yeah.
How much do the Bengals win, Lebowitz?
Not very often, and when they do, it's about 500.
Right. Bengals don't cheat. I mean, on the field, they're kind of they've been a dirty team, but they don't cheat. Rams are 30. The Rams are 30. The Rams do have some success with winning, so that's the anomaly. 31 and 32. The Jaguars and the Cardinals. But at the same time, here's who cheats the second cheatingest team in the NFL, Lebowitz. I'll give you the top 3. The Broncos are the cheatingest team in the NFL, according to this website. They've had some success. They have. Here's 2 and 3. The Jets and the Colts. How much have the Jets and the Colts won? How much has their cheating helped them? Get the hell out of here. All of it. All of it. There's no moral high ground when you're a sports fan. We've all done something at some point rooting for our team that's not morally right, okay? Myself included. We all have. We in New England cheered for, you know, some players who were probably, you know, you've all cheered for players who are less than reputable characters, or, you know, you try to excuse away bad behavior, right? There's levels, certainly. You know, Penn State's probably at the top of that. But
yeah, probably.
There's no moral high ground when you're a sports fan. I don't believe that. So get out of here.
Well, it's important to just to wrap up. It's important to acknowledge that like cheating, the pursuit of winning is paramount in professional sports.
Yes, results-oriented business.
100%. And teams are going to try to bend the rules. They're going to try to cut corners when they feel like they can get away with it, or when it's something that they know other teams are doing and it's just culturally accepted. And you know, one of the reasons I wasn't that hell-bent on criticizing the Astros, although what they did was bring it to a level that was inexcusable, and I can acknowledge that. But I think most teams, and more than half, are probably doing something similar to some extent. And I go back to when I played high school baseball. We would try to steal the signs from the coaching staff when they're feeding it to the catcher. We try to do certain things that, you know, give us a little bit of an advantage. It happens. that's a part of you know, being a competitor. It's a part of being in sports. And when it's something that's culturally, you know, tolerated as a whole, you can't be surprised when certain teams get caught doing something that is later deemed as cheating. And it's also naive to think that they're the only ones that are taking part in that act. And, you know, with the Patriots, success is going to bring on a spotlight. And, you know, that's obviously evident with the Patriots. And you just cited the yourteamcheats.com to prove it. They're in the middle of the pack. They don't win this much because they haven't had this successful run because they cheat. It's because they're a well-run organization. And they've had a heavy spotlight. And that's not to minimize or excuse that aspect of sports, but that is to say that this issue is not specific to the Patriots. And to act like it is just, you know, just ridiculous.
All right, we'll wrap it up there because we're getting long here. But, yeah, we built that event on some stuff. We did that. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. More playoff talk, hopefully less venting. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. Until the next one, for Alex Lovewitz, I'm Alex Barkley. Thanks for listening.